That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 360, sportsnet.ca/590, and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Yes, indeed. Brady and Walker, let's bring the intensity. It's Black Friday. Happy Black Friday. And we don't have to say Happy American Black Friday. People yelling at me yesterday for saying Happy American Thanksgiving. It's Black Friday everywhere, isn't it? Might not be in Europe. We're going to look into this. Lots of hockey on. We'll touch on that. Some Jose Bautista nuggets to chew on. Same as David Price. So we'll do that in a bit. But let me start here on Aaron Rodgers last night. You maybe watched Bears-Packers. And you saw something that no matter what Jay Cutler does the rest of his career, and he wasn't great, he's going to say, I finally won at Lambeau Field, and I beat Aaron Rodgers. The Bears won there 2 years ago, but it was Josh McCown at quarterback. And the game was on the fingertips of Aaron Rodgers, maybe damaged fingertips or a damaged wrist or damaged elbow, whatever he left the game with temporarily. But here's what Packers fans didn't expect this year. An inefficient passing game. You have it if you're a Packers fan. You see it, and it's not going to change next week or the week after or the week after that. So maybe we've gotten used to Aaron Rodgers' greatness, and we just assume, hey, he's great every week. Why criticize him? Even for a down week or a down month. Well, the Packers have now lost 4 to 5 games, and it's not because of a bad running game, and it's not because of a terrible offensive line, and it's certainly not because of a porous defense. They have limited their last 3 opponents to under 20 points, and outside of the Carolina and Denver games, they did that in 4 of the first 6 games of the year when they started 6-0. But is Aaron Rodgers above criticism? We're talking like he's a top 5 all-time NFL quarterback. He's won 6 playoff games. He's lost 4 of his last 6. And one of the 2 he won was against a guy named Joe Webb. I know. It's like right out of Dragnet. Joe Webb, Joe Friday, same guy. They beat the Minnesota Vikings when Christian Ponder couldn't play. So we'll talk about Aaron Rodgers and whether he's not getting critiqued enough. Because Peyton Manning's getting killed right now and Tom Brady would be getting the same. If this was happening, is he the second best quarterback in the NFL still? If you had one game to win, not so sure.
This is Brady and Walker online at sportsnet.ca/590, on TV at Sportsnet 360, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker or text 590-590. Now, here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
Really great to be here today. Friday shows are fun. And when I'm not talking and making points, good, bad, or indifferent, there's live sports to watch. Rangers Bruins on Sportsnet right now, if you are so intrigued. But that's somewhere to go during breaks here and rolling back. It's great for split screens. It's great for 2 TV households. Raptors are off tonight. They'll play at the Washington Wizards tomorrow. The Leafs are off tonight. They'll play the Washington Capitals. They obviously can't play in the same arena. So where are we with Aaron Rodgers after a disappointing loss last night? I think Aaron Rodgers played decently, but he's not meant to be decent. He's not meant to be passable. He's Aaron freaking Rodgers, and we expect awesomeness. And the problem with the playoff record, it's tricky, isn't it? Peyton Manning's judged as a great regular season quarterback, but he's 11-13 in playoff games, and we hold it against him. And I think we should. Peyton's made his living playing in domes, being great in September, October, and November. Generally speaking, in a bad division. When he was in the AFC East, starting off with Indianapolis, remember they were there before they switched to 8 divisions from 6. That wasn't a very good division. Buffalo, no playoffs. Miami, not very good at all. New England, prior to Brady, not very good either. There were 3 or 4 years that Indianapolis was able to beat up on New England and the Jets and Buffalo and Miami and win the AFC East. Then guess what? You get to go to the AFC South. Anybody good there? No, not really. When Peyton Manning gets there, Jacksonville's in decline. Tennessee's in decline. The Texans have just started a little bit of a wave, but it looked like their window closed about 3 years ago. So lots of AFC cupcakes to beat up on for Peyton Manning. When you got to play the big boys, whether it's Pittsburgh, whether it's Denver, whether it's Brady and the Patriots, Peyton Manning kind of flounders a little bit, doesn't he? I mean, that Super Bowl, you won't see a more lopsided Super Bowl because Peyton Manning couldn't handle it and wasn't ready to play. That's part of it anyway, the Denver-Seattle game. And now he can't feel his fingers, and we know his career is almost over. We don't expect it to end this way for Aaron Rodgers, but you're going to have to do a little bit better than 6-5 as a career postseason quarterback to end up getting prominently placed, especially on a night when Brett Favre comes back and gets the number 4 retired, way, way, way ahead of Favre. I think some of the things Rodgers does are more impressive than Favre, but there's some things that he doesn't do quite as well. We'll ask Jason Cole about it in a little bit. Aaron Rodgers had this to say. He was asked if he could do more, given the absence of Jordy Nelson all season long, Randall Cobb, lack of chemistry. The Packers lose last night, a game that they just shouldn't lose, and better quarterbacking prevents that loss. Like I said, nothing to do with defense, pass protection, run game, zero, except Aaron Rodgers needing to be better. 17-13, the Bears beat the Packers. Aaron Rodgers said this after the game.
I just think that I'm obviously going to have to make sure that my preparation is as high as it's ever been, because we got to get on the same page in the passing game. The run game is, you know, has been better the last couple of weeks. Obviously, Eddie being healthy has helped. We're just on different pages. You know, when you miss throws, when I'm throwing at a certain depth and the receivers run at a certain depth, obviously we're on different pages. So we need to have some better communication and make sure there's not those discrepancies in the depths and the adjustments.
It's an easy thing to get caught up in numbers. Every number that you see is bigger in 2015 than it was in 1995. From players' salaries, except for goals and assists and in hockey and home runs in baseball compared to 10 years ago. But in the NFL, the passing game, can't judge it by passing yards, can you? 300-yard games, Aaron Rodgers has had 4 of those this year. Have you noticed? Did you remember any of them being memorable? Well, 2 of them were in losses, in which he didn't play very well in the first half. So a lot of makeup yards against Carolina, a lot of makeup yards against Detroit. They barely beat Kansas City at home at Lambeau in week 3, and Aaron Rodgers threw 5 touchdowns for 333 yards. Where are we at with Aaron Rodgers? We have to distinguish and separate Brady and Rodgers, don't we? If there's one quarterback, and he's 8 years older than Aaron Rodgers, 7.5 to be precise, you're taking Tom Brady to win 1 football game. There's not really a call you could make of a healthy quarterback, even a healthy Andrew Luck, and calling me and saying, this is the quarterback I take instead of Tom Brady. But is Aaron Rodgers your number 2? 416-870-0590, *590. It's been a bit of a down year. Are you allowed to have a down year? Possibly. Tom Brady had one the year after he won the Super Bowl, when he was more game manager in 2002, and the Patriots missed the playoffs. Peyton Manning missed the playoffs in his 5th season, and we all know how long it took him to get in gear and win playoff games, period. Rodgers' ascension was so fast, and the Brett Favre stuff was still around. The year Green Bay wins the Super Bowl with Rodgers, Favre's with Minnesota, and being very good. That Jets year was almost just a bad blip in 2008 when the Jets jettisoned Chad Pennington, went with Favre, and they picked the wrong guy. Pennington had a better season in Miami, won the AFC East that year that Tom Brady was out and Matt Castle was pitching it around for New England, although New England finished 11-5. 416-870-0590, *590. You can tweet at Brady and Walker. Jason Cole in about 7 minutes. The football was really strange yesterday with the 2 blowout games, and we'll talk about Carolina and the perspective on them at 11-0, and also why the Dallas Cowboys are probably going to be the landing destination for Johnny Manziel. You really only need to add 2 and 2 together. You'll get 4 and you'll figure it out. We'll talk about that as the show goes on as well. Bill in Port Credit, you're on Brady and Walker. Go ahead, Bill.
Good afternoon, Greg. Just so you know, even Eastern Europe now has Black Friday. So it is a global phenomenon.
Yeah, they're those black market blue jeans and 8-track cassettes don't sell like they used to in the communist era. Yeah,
exactly. What I wanted to compare, I know you don't like it when we compare 2 different sports, but Aaron Rodgers this year reminds me of Sidney Crosby. I think these 2 guys have enough credit in the bank that they are excellent, excellent players, and they are having a statistically and record-wise bad season. But that's just circumstance, and I think next year will be different. And even though this year, obviously, Cam Newton would rank ahead of Aaron Rodgers, I think overall he would be second behind Brady.
Yeah, I wonder if people would take Newton. I wonder if people would take, God, I still, when I see Ben Roethlisberger healthy, I still think there's things he does that no other quarterback ends up doing. And he can do a little more in terms of escaping than Tom Brady can. What we underrated about Brady, two things we underrated with him coming out of Michigan, and I covered him at Michigan his whole senior season when he was splitting time with Drew Henson back then. We underrated his arm. There's no question we did. And he didn't look like an athlete. We underestimated his brain because we looked at his body, and he was skinny and kind of flabby in the upper body, right? You could grab his shoulders, and there was some, you could dig your fingernails into it. Not that I did. He was not a physical specimen, not by any stretch of the imagination. You wonder to yourself, can the guy do 70 push-ups? He's starting quarterback at a Big Ten school. He just won the Orange Bowl over an Alabama team with Sean Alexander. But how much of that was just being a good college quarterback? Because there's been plenty of guys. A.J. McCarron just did it out of Alabama. There'll be guys doing it and playing great. Colt McCoy was a very good college quarterback. The list is endless. And that's just the last 5 or 6 years. Really good college quarterbacks. I'm not even talking your Lux or your RG3s or even Russell Wilson when he went from North Carolina to Wisconsin and played well in the Big Ten. He adjusted very, very well. And a lot of GMs just missed on Russell Wilson. But Rodgers is really struggling to connect with key targets. And I think we'll know a lot more about it at the end of the season, but he's not very reliable right now. And I just don't notice the criticism. I don't notice people going in and saying there's a trend happening here. You lose 4 or 5 games. Do we think Tom Brady's ever lost 4 to 5 starts, 3 of which have been at home? I doubt it. I don't think he has. I feel like it would stand out like a sore thumb. Peyton Manning, almost the same thing until this season. With Indianapolis for the first 3 years with Denver, I don't think we saw that at all. So I'll explain the Dallas Cowboys thing. Tony Romo is out with a broken clavicle through 2 pick-sixes in yesterday's game. And it was significant, wasn't it? Because people said, well, he's unbeaten. He's 3-0. Dallas won't lose with him. And I made the point yesterday that I thought the Panthers were going to smash the Cowboys. And we've talked about football and wagering before. 55% is amazing. 55% would be incredible to get 55 out of 100 games right against the spread. You've done very, very well for yourself. But I just didn't get yesterday at all. There couldn't have been that much on the line for the Cowboys. There couldn't have been that many people buying into the Cowboys' mystique and the magic of playing on Thanksgiving, which they've done for 40 years. And the fact that Romo was healthy. Carolina's a better roster. They've drafted better. They've signed better players. And they obviously haven't been a circus. And Cam Newton is coming into the prime of his career. A lot of people wanted to anoint him in his first or second year. And I didn't get it. Lots of passing yards. You know where you can really get tripped up? It might be the worst stat in all of sports is passing yards. When do you need to throw the ball? When you're behind in a game. Why are you behind in a game? Sometimes ineffective quarterbacking. Can't keep the team on the field on third and long. Can't convert on third down. Look at fourth quarter completion percentage and third downs made and attempted. And you get a sense who good quarterbacks are. Phillip Rivers isn't having a very good year. But you know what? He's second in passing yards. Sorry, they're behind in every game. And he makes mistakes in the first 2.5 quarters that force him to throw at 8 out of every 9 throws. Matt Ryan is fourth in passing yards in the NFL. He hasn't been very reliable at all. He's got double-digit interceptions. Nobody throws more than 10 interceptions if they're having a good season. Because Matt Stafford's thrown 12, and he's not having a good year. Ryan Tannehill's thrown 10. We all know what I think of him. Ryan Fitzpatrick, 11. Sam Bradford, 10. So the bottom line is, I mean, think about it by comparison. Aaron Rodgers threw his fourth interception last night. He's got 24 touchdowns. When he gets in the red zone, he's incredibly efficient. And like last night, remember the spot last night? There's about 2.5 minutes left. The Packers are starting to use their timeouts. Rodgers has already thrown a pick. The Bears have a 4th-and-1 with a 4-point lead at midfield. I could not believe that they didn't go for it. You're 1 yard away, sneaking something out at Lambeau Field. You're on the road. You can go 5-and-6. This is a bulletin board win for Jay Cutler. This is a 20 years from now. Cutler, tell us again about that story when you won at Lambeau on the Thursday night. Because there may not be a Super Bowl for Jay Cutler. There may not be another NFC title game hosted for Jay Cutler. There may not be another playoff win for Jay Cutler. That's all fine and good. Are we overrating Aaron Rodgers? And is he still the second best quarterback in the sport? 416-870-0590, star 590. I'll explain the Johnny Manziel stuff as quick as I can. Dallas was chastised by many in the 14 draft for passing on Manziel. He fell to number 22 and went to the Cleveland Browns. Now, John Gruden's yelling at everybody during the ESPN NFL draft coverage from Radio City. Take Manziel. Take Johnny Football. Got to have Johnny Football. The arm, the excitement. Well, I don't think he can play, but Dallas has put plenty of guys in there who haven't challenged Tony Romo in about a decade who can't play. Can you name me a Dallas backup quarterback you've been really comfortable with? John Kitna at the end of his career. They put Drew Henson in there at one point and tried to resurrect his career before he went to the Vikings after he came back and gave up on AAA baseball, playing in the Yankees farm system. And the guys you got this year, Brandon Whedon, and, of course, Matt Cassel, who's going to get the start next week. Very fortunate for the Bills, very fortunate for the Jets. You don't want to applaud an injury, far from it, but the Bills and Jets are going to miss out on a Tony Romo-led Dallas Cowboys team. But yesterday, that shows you where Miami's at compared to Carolina as a defense. Romo looked like a world beater in the second half down in Miami, shaking off the rust. And people are like, see, he'd been throwing for 3 weeks. He's not rusty. There's no problem. Different story yesterday at home. Our next guest, a fantastic NFL writer for Bleacher Report. Jason Cole joins us now on Brady and Walker. Thanks for doing this on your holiday weekend. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Tell us, I feel like Johnny Manziel could end up in Dallas. Do you feel that's absolutely nuts, or do you go, hey, it's Jerry Jones, he's from Texas, and Tony Romo is 36 and a half years old, and he's had yet another season-ending injury? I'm not saying Manziel can play, because I don't think he can, but it wouldn't be like Dallas not to try, would it?
No, I can see that would happen. I mean, I could definitely see that they would take a chance with that one. Jerry was, he was entranced by Johnny Manziel when Manziel was in college. So I could see him take a shot with that. I'm in agreement with you. I don't think that Johnny can play. So I don't think it makes much of a difference. And I don't really think about it. But if you're going to pick a team that's going to take a shot with Johnny, it would be the Cowboys.
How much harder, Jason, is it for a young quarterback now? There's guys who get drafted. It's one thing if you're Tim Couch or Jamarcus Russell and you're a one overall pick and you just have to get out there. But even top three guys, Joey Harrington, who busted out, didn't start right away. And Donovan McNabb, who was great, didn't start right away. He was behind Rodney Pete in Philadelphia. Now you get second rounders starting games in their first year. Geno Smith, even Ryan Tannehill at 8 is in his fourth year as a starter. There's not much of a learning curve. That's kind of why I like the Denver situation with Osweiler. I think he's gotten to sit and watch Peyton Manning, who's a quarterback genius, for 3 years. That can only benefit him, right?
Pretty much. But look, this is not a league where, like, the classic idea is you take a guy and you groom him for 3 or 4 years. And it turns out like Aaron Rodgers, or it turns out like Steve Young with following Montana. But generally, teams don't think that way. What they generally do is they ride whoever their current quarterback is until they need another one, and then they pick the next one. So this whole apprenticeship idea, while it sounds great in theory, is not great. It doesn't really work out because teams aren't going to pay to have two guys, and they're not going to pay a high draft pick to sit for a long, long time. That's a rarity. So there's an expectation they play. There's also, they throw more in college, so those guys are more prepared than they ever have been to throw a lot. So to me, I don't know that that's, I just don't know that that's really, it's not the norm. The norm is like what I saw in Miami when I covered them for a long time, 15 years. And what happened was, they rode Dan Marino until the bitter end. When Dan Marino was done, they went on a search, and that search has pretty much been going on for the 16 years ever since. And they're hoping that Tannehill becomes that guy, even though he hasn't shown a lot of signs of growth.
So you must have been covering them during the Damon Heward year, where it felt like a healthy Marino and a healthy Heward. And it was kind of a toss-up. You almost felt like it's leaning now towards where the guy who's 8-9 years younger, though he ain't Dan Marino and never is going to be, is the better option to win football games.
Yeah, but even Damon, they were just tricking it up with Damon. They were playing game suppression. I remember that season very distinctly. That was not a, okay, we're going to we have this young guy who can throw it around and we're going to be aggressive with him. No, it was more like, okay, we have a guy who's got enough talent to get us through some games until Marino's back. So, you know, it was different. Ultimately, Heward would have been the better option because Marino never got healthy, which is probably why Osweiler's the better option at this point with Manning hurting. It doesn't mean that Osweiler was the answer, just like it didn't mean that Heward was the answer there. But you take a longer look at Osweiler because he's got more physical skill.
Jason Cole joins NFL reporter for Bleacher Report. It is, I think you make a great point about the money and the economics. I also wonder if the media is bigger now. The NFL is more global. Fans think whether it's right or not that they have more of a voice. Like, I think about Vinny Testaverde, right? Coming out of college, he's the number one pick for Tampa, and he sits for the first half of the year behind Steve DeBerg, who's basically a journeyman at that point. And now there'd be pressure. They'd be like, oh, my God, they didn't like him in camp, and why is he failing to meet expectations? And they just thought, and Tampa was a bit of a mess, but they just thought it was the best thing for him to watch, didn't they, for 6-7 weeks?
Right, because he wasn't ready for the pro game, and he hadn't. I mean, he played in as close to a pro style offense as you could probably find, but he hadn't learned all the stuff that you need to know at the pro level. It's different now. So many schools throw the ball around so much, and even high schools throw the ball around so much as compared to when Testaverde was coming out, or when Elway and Marino were coming out. They didn't throw the ball nearly as much when they were in high school and college as they did when they got to the pros. So it's there's just huge gaps and huge differences. But now I think guys are more able to at least get back there and handle it. The big question coming out of college right now is that protections aren't the same, especially in these spread offenses where there's very little protection, very little classic protection. The running backs don't pick up blitzes, all those kinds of things. And now, a lot of quarterbacks just don't even understand how do you call protections and change things up. They're just looking, going, okay, we have a numbers advantage over here. We'll just throw it over here, or we'll run it because we have a numbers advantage in the running game, whatever it happens to be. And they don't learn the nuances that go with throwing the ball around.
Jason Cole, our guest, Brady and Walker. How do you think it all ends for Peyton Manning? There are very good quarterbacks, but maybe not many Hall of Famers who've enjoyed being backup or sort of sign up. Warren Moon's on the show later today. He didn't have a problem with it, wanted to prolong the career.
It never ends well for these guys.
Yeah, Marino had a chance to go and play either with Call. Like, I felt like it was Minnesota, so
he wasn't happy. He retired and he wasn't happy.
Yeah.
I'm sure, Warren played for, two or three teams?
Randall Cunningham was one the last 6-7 years, but we don't have anybody quite, I don't think we think Drew Brees is going to carry a clipboard, and I don't think we think, John Elway was never going to do it, Brady's not going to do it. So when Peyton Manning says he wants to play next year, do you think there's a team
that says... It's not a binary exercise, okay? It's not just I've decided I'm going to play next year, here we go. Okay,
you need a partner, yeah.
Yeah, you need somebody else who sits there and says, okay, and if you look around at there's probably 6 or 7 teams that definitely need quarterbacks next year. I would put Buffalo on the edge of that, depending on how Tyrod Taylor plays the rest of the year. But I put them on the edge of that. And with them on the edge of that 6 or 7 or 8 teams, could you imagine Peyton Manning going up to Buffalo and playing?
No.
I can't see that. I can't see him playing in that wind and cold. So, okay, they might agree to do it. It'll be a colossal failure. So I don't think anybody with any common sense would sit there and go, okay, Peyton Manning, Buffalo, let's do it, let's roll. There's an even smaller group of teams that you look at and you say, okay, it can actually work. And like a team like Houston, and I don't think Houston would work because I don't think Bill O'Brien wants to change his offense to do what Peyton Manning wants to do.
Yeah, I can't see it either, and I don't feel he miscalculated in Denver. They were a one seed. They lost to the eventual Super Bowl champion Ravens. They get to the Super Bowl the next year. They were a very good team last year going into the playoffs. So, I mean, he was 30. I got him at 38-10 as a starter his first 3 seasons. It's not like he made the wrong choice going to Denver. He didn't win the game 2 years ago.
Right. No, look, everything about what Peyton Manning's done in Denver has been a huge success with one glaring deficiency. I wouldn't call it small, but it's glaring. And that is, they didn't win a championship. And they should have won it the year that they, that they lost to Baltimore in the playoffs because they should have won that game. I mean, that was John Fox and Jack Del Rio botched that game at the end with the defense that they called. But they just call a normal defense that pass to Jacoby Jones never happens. So, and they never go to overtime and all those things that played out afterwards. So they missed that opportunity. They got blown out by Seattle. You know, they were not the better team in that matchup. And last year, the wheels started to come off with Peyton Manning. But I think if you asked, I don't know, 28 other teams in the league, I mean, let's take Seattle, you know, New England and Baltimore out of the equation. But if you ask those, you know, again, those three get you 29, take Denver. If you take the other 28 teams, the other 28 teams would probably look at Denver and say, we'll take that for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
We'll be happy with that. That was okay.
Chip Kelly, tell me your thoughts on how it looks in Philadelphia for more next.
It looks like USC. That's what it looks like. It looks like he's going west. I can't imagine Chip wanting to stay through this.
Would Chip? But I feel like Chip. There's two things I look at and I go: Tennessee fired their guy. Indianapolis might open up, and there's all sorts of rumors about Nick Saban. I mean, is he still a valuable commodity as a pro? It felt like he got water with Nick Foles 2 years ago. Foles can't play, and he got 20 wins out of him in 2 years.
Okay.
I guess what I'm saying is I think he knows how to run a pro offense. I think he's at a blind spot here with Sam Bradford, and it's hurt him.
I think there's a couple of problems. No, it's not so much a blind spot with Sam. Sam Bradford's been one of the highlights of this season for them. It's not Bradford's not the problem. It's their defense is terrible, and his personnel management is awful. So Chip Kelly by himself, if he was just calling plays and stuff like that, okay, that's semi-reasonable. Chip Kelly with all the power in the world to run a pro football team? No. And here's one of the things.
Okay.
What was Chip Kelly 10 years ago? Does anybody know, like, what Chip Kelly was doing 10 years ago?
He was at New Hampshire before Oregon, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, in the space of 10 years, which is, you know, which is relatively short in a coaching career. This guy's gone from being like a Division II, Division III level coach to having personnel management responsibilities of an NFL team. Like, there are so many steps in the middle of this that Chip Kelly missed and doesn't understand and doesn't get. And so much human management of individuals that he doesn't get and doesn't understand. And I'm not sure he's ever going to be able to learn it. So Chip can sit here and, you know, play his little mental games about, oh, I'm just here to coach people and I don't need to have a relationship with them, and, oh, I'm going to run, you know, their life with their smoothies and their workout routines and all this other stuff and keep track of this and run my sports science.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to run my goofy offense where I don't control the ball long enough. And on top of that, I'm going to take, you know, charge of personnel because, man, you should know my 20 years of experience. Oh, whoops, I don't have that 20 years of experience at the Division I and NFL level. I've just got about 8 years of experience at Division I and NFL level. Okay, that's all he's really got. So he doesn't know personnel as well as we would like to imagine he knows it. He knows football very well.
I agree, and I agree with you. I think the average NFL fan also thinks Chip Kelly helped build Oregon when Mike Bellotti was there in the late 90s, and that's his program. I mean, Chip's still got to recruit, and he's still got to get to the Rose Bowl.
A long time.
Long time. At least, I think he must have been there 15 years. Had to have been there 15 years to build it back up.
Serious about it. It's not even Bellotti. Phil Knight built the Oregon program.
Money has helped.
No, Phil Knight supplied them with all sorts of money to run. You know, that's basically a Nike. It's a Nike factory outlet. That's what the University of Oregon is. And then they've had enough money to cheat too. Okay, all the guys who used to go to other big, you know, Pac-10 schools, Pac-12 schools, they bought those kids. Okay, there's a reason that all those kids from LA went up to Oregon all of a sudden. They bought them, and you know, Chip got in trouble for buying them. That's why he got in trouble with the NCAA. But that was all the money that was just floating in that program, whether it was from Phil Knight to build up the program or from other donors. They decided they wanted to be a dominant power, and they bought it. And That's not personnel analysis. That's not going out on the road the way Butch Davis did when he rebuilt the University of Miami and going and finding players the way that they found players. It's a totally different exercise.
It's great. It's great insight on it. Do you still look and say there won't be an NFL team offer him a gig then? That USC is more meant for him, made for him?
No, I think he's going back to college.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, the money is just as good. You know, you can go to, I mean, USC is going to be paying $6-8 million.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? And you can go there and run his offense and be great, or you go to one of those other top college programs that may open up. There's a ton of money floating at the college level, so it's not about the cash. It's about how you run your program, and I just don't see I don't see anybody else in the NFL sitting there and saying, okay, let's line Chip's pocket.
Yeah, it went so well
after what he's done in Philly.
Jason Cole, NFL reporter, read him on Bleacher Report. He always does a great job and has had a great career. Thanks for this, Jason. Appreciate it.
No problem. Take care.
Thanks. Jason Cole joining us on Brady and Walker. Coming up next, there's a new logo out for a major sports league, and someone told me it looked like a tombstone. And they were right. Plus, best and worst, it's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Absolutely free. Back to Brady and Walker on TV at Sportsnet 360, online at sportsnet.ca/590, and on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Best and worst in a little bit. All we had was football yesterday. No complaints. Great to get three games on a Thursday. All were on Sportsnet. We'll talk about the weekend coming up in the NFL during the Terrible 10. Do our picks. You could win a $100 gift card to Got Style after 3 o'clock later today. All of us had great weeks last week. None were really any better than the other. All right, our producer JD was 9-1 against the spread. That never happens. We have never had a 10-0 week against the spread, but we've only been doing this 11 weeks. We're picking straight up games last week. That was really hard. Browns at Patriots. I don't know about this one, but I'm leaning Patriots. So the NBA returns in earnest tonight in a ton of different markets. There's a ton of fascinating games, one of which will be Miami at New York. Heat-Knicks always feels a little bit like a rivalry game, but the Knicks have to be good, right, to be rivals with outside of Brooklyn, and they look better. We'll talk about that a little bit. Former Brooklyn Nets assistant GM Bobby Marks is one of our favorite guys to go to. Great to have you on, Bobby. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. How are you today?
Well, I'm getting besieged from all sides by my producer. We've had this D'Angelo Russell, Kristaps Porzingis thing, and I said in the summer, I'm the one that tweeted the pictures out of the angry Knicks fans when his name was announced. I thought he looked kind of goofy with the hat on, and we're like, what on earth is Phil Jackson is really smoking something more than normal? But he looks like a superstar, and he looks like a franchise player. Is it too early to tell after 16 games that this could be a really transcendent? There's nobody that's 7'3", maybe ever in the league, that moves like he does or shoots like he does.
I think we are a little bit earlier. I think you've gotten, New York's been starving for a couple of years. You know, they haven't had a very good team, and to have a guy come in and kind of ride on the white horse and everything, and they've been starting for a winner, and he's been good. I've seen him, I've gone over to the Garden about 4 or 5 times in person, and have seen him up close and personal, and they're still a little bit, he's a little bit of a liability on defense, besides his shot blocking and everything, but he's been as good as advertised so far, just considering. He is still only, 19, 20 years old. I had a little bit of an advantage last year because he played on a team when I was with the Nets in Spain, that we had a second rounder that was stashed over there. So I got to see him a little bit more than other people. So, it would be interesting if New York had Carl Anthony Towns. I don't know what they'd be doing, maybe building statues right now there. So we've kind of missed out on him a little bit out in Minnesota and stuff. But Porzingis is, through 16 games, he's been, as good as advertised. I don't know if we're ready to put franchise labels on him yet.
Yeah, he plays with some aggression too, which is obviously, as you'd know, 10 years ago when Bargnani was drafted, that's what people were hoping for. And it's really difficult. I think we can so overdo body language. Kevin Garnett doesn't care that much more than Dirk Nowitzki does about being great or winning on a nightly basis, but they're vocal and they verbalize it. And but I see that with Porzingis. I see him being vocal and I see him being a very aggressive and animated. I suppose people like that.
He's got a nasty streak about him. Mm-hmm. You know, you watched the Orlando game the other night, and you know he wasn't. I think him and Channing Frye were kind of going back and forth a little bit about. He's embraced New York. He understood when he got drafted, you know, the boos that kind of came with it, and with, you know, the European you know, player coming over to the States and everything. So he's kind of embraced that. He's got a nose, you know, for the ball. You know, he's not afraid to kind of get his hands a little bit of dirty and get into contact and everything. So he does have a little bit of a mean streak to him. You know, even as thin as he is and as long as he is and everything. So which is what you like to see.
I'm not trying to judge L.A. because I think it's really difficult to judge them now. I'm not sure Byron Scott is long for the job. I think they've enabled Kobe Bryant too much. So in a post-Kobe world, I want to ease off on being critical of D'Angelo Russell and even Julius Randle, who it's really a rookie season for him. But would you go back? Do you think Mitch Kupchak definitely goes back in time and takes Porzingis? Does he say there's so many good guards out in the West, I have to have a point? You have to have a point guard to compete in that conference, especially, and he'd still stick with Russell. It's still really early days.
You know, it's a good question. You know, and I agree with you. And it's hard to kind of judge what's going on in L.A. because there's so many variables there. You've got, you know, you've got the Kobe aspect. You've got a team that's struggling. You know, the one thing you don't want to happen with Russell and Randle and even in Clarkson this year is to kind of have their growth, you know, and their development stunted a little bit with what's going on. And, you know, we're going to have the Kobe dilemma, I guess, basically going into every game as far as his minutes and shots. And, you know, Byron is, you know, as long as he's there, is going to defend him, Kobe. And we'll see how that plays out and everything. So I don't know. I was a big D'Angelo Russell fan when I saw him at Ohio State, and you know, even going into the draft, I thought him going number two was a good spot for himself, especially being in the NLA and everything like that. It's hard to play, you know, the second judge and everything like that. But you know, I think there are a couple of GMs. You know, if you're Philadelphia, I mean, Okafor's been good, but you know, as far as a Porzingis, there also.
Yeah, it's Bobby Marks joining us, Brady and Walker. I was thinking about the East and thinking about the teams that we were going to talk about. And do the Raptors find themselves in maybe a conference, and especially now with how it's formatted, you could win the Atlantic Division and be starting on the road or even be a sixth seed based on how it all breaks out. But a lot of teams seem to have arrived either back or up for the first time in a half decade or so, maybe a little sooner. The Pistons look like a good team. The Pacers are very resurgent. Charlotte is good. We know Boston and New York are okay. Could we have an actual legit East playoff race, Bobby, with good teams winning 43, 44 games and maybe missing?
Yeah, I mean, there is a ton of parity. You know, I had said before the season, I thought 42 to 44 wins would have would get you in if you're the if you're the eighth seed. And people looked at me like I had three heads and everything. And I really kind of bought into, you know, the Charlotte of the world and Detroit and even Orlando with, you know, with Scott Skiles down there. I thought New York would have been a little bit better this year and everything. But there is a ton of parity, and I think if you were Toronto, you kind of want to get away from the teams that are in that 7 to 12 range. You want to get some separation and kind of be in the class with Cleveland and Chicago and Miami and even Indiana, I guess, to a point right now, and kind of, you know, let those teams kind of duke it out for those other remaining spots and everything. But there is a ton of parity. I mean, even, you know, even Brooklyn to an extent, I know they're 3 and 12 and everything, but they're in a lot of games, and, you know, they can kind of beat you on a given night. But there is, you know, we're going to see this East race kind of go down to the wire and everything here.
So this is year 7 for DeMar DeRozan in Toronto, coming into a contract year when we all know cap goes up, money goes up, spending will go up. I think you can, if I said, hey, I'm not sure DeMar DeRozan's a max player, and I'm not sure the Raptors can ever achieve greatness if he's one of your two best players, somebody might call or tweet and go, well, why don't you like him? Well, you can like him, but you can say everything I said, and it's still true. How do you view him? Does he pass the smell test as a max contract player in a new higher spending world?
Well, up through the first 16 games, I think, you know, him and Kyle have shown probably to be, you know, probably one of the best backcourts, you know, in the East, you know, if not the in the NBA and everything like that. I think where players get judged with money and, you know, how they're kind of put on a pedestal is how, you know, where they can take their teams in the playoffs and everything. And, you know, the last 2 years, you know, Toronto's kind of come up a little bit short in the first round with losing to Brooklyn and then this past year losing to Washington. I think from a money standpoint, from a justification standpoint, if he can get Toronto into the play, you know, I mean, I think they will be in the playoffs, but to kind of lead him on a nice run here, then people will look at it as money well justified and stuff like that. It, you know, the cap is going up, you know, up. He's at a really cap-friendly number. I think he's at 10.5 right now. His opt-in number is right around the same amount and stuff like that. He, you know, there's a chance that he might get double that, you know. And, you know, what you're looking at is if he opted out, what else guards are on the, you know, on the open market? It's not a great free agent class. So it's a matter of, you know, as I always say, retaining your own or kind of letting him go out, and who can you replace him with? So it'll be an interesting case. You know, I think from what I've seen, you know, he loves it up there, and, you know, and they love him, you know, right back.
We got about 40 seconds. Clippers are 7-8. We know the Rockets made a coaching change. They're 5-10. We'd have not been surprised if they both were hosting first-round playoff series. Is the West too deep? There's plenty of time. Do you look at both teams and say, though there's a slight level of dysfunction with both, there's plenty of time for both those to be Western Conference contenders? Or do you go, I've seen enough after 15 games, and especially with where Golden State and San Antonio are at, and these won't be good years in May and June for the Clippers or Rockets?
Well, I think there's a difference between being a contender and just getting in the playoffs. And I think the trying to just get into the playoffs kind of falls over the Houston right now. I think a contender, you know, I think the Clippers are still in that boat, but they've got some things they've got to figure out, you know, and I don't see them making any drastic moves. You know, they've got a lot of new players, but you know, when you've got, you know, three to top 20 players in the league, you know, you've got a good enough players to kind of go on a long run here.
Bobby Marks joining us. You can follow him at BobbyMarks42. Enjoy the rest of your holiday weekend. Avoid the malls. I'm sure that you're not one of these shopper people. I'm sure you're not.
I was sleeping when it was 8:30 this morning, so I'm not a Black Friday guy.
Yeah, that's reasonable. Bobby Marks, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yep, you're welcome. Thank you.
Former Brooklyn Nets assistant GM. I know a woman in the States, careful with the rumors. She went out at midnight last night. Midnight. To go midnight mountain time to go shopping because the store is open. Can you imagine getting dragged along for that? Can you imagine saving $19 on a microwave, $49 on a television, and getting out and going out at midnight to do it? Can you imagine? People do stuff. Let's do best and worst from the three NFL games.
Best.
Tony Amonte.
And worst.
Tony Romo.
With Brady and Walker.
That didn't even sound, I was expecting a Tony Danza on either side. Gets paid less because his character's named Tony. Not many people know that. Stealing that from a very funny comedian. Best win, Carolina Panthers. The level of disrespect was pretty remarkable, and that'll factor in worst player coming up in a little bit. You'll have to figure out how that happens. There's not much Carolina isn't doing right now. Now, I do not think they're finishing 16-0. I think they're going to lose a couple games, and I'm not sure they're making the NFC title game even. They may only have to win one game to get there, but that's how deep the NFC is. But we have seen Atlanta turn into a bit of a pretender, Minnesota turn into a bit of a pretender, Green Bay into a bit of a pretender. So maybe there's a door and a window for the Seattle Seahawks to walk through or crawl through. Maybe, just maybe. Big game against Pittsburgh that we'll talk about. Worst loss, Green Bay Packers. We know they really struggled in terms of putting an offensive game plan together. A lot of questions about the play call. And Aaron Rodgers had plenty of time to throw. It was just a matter of a few drops by his receivers. And also Aaron Rodgers not exactly reading the routes as he should. Throwing balls short, 6 yards when you need third and nine, when you need nine to get a third down. Can't criticize the fourth down play, really, but he is throwing off his back foot and running for his life. Now, another quarterback with a great day. Let's give best player to Matt Stafford. A lot of people wanted to run Matt Stafford out of Detroit. Marshall Faulk was on Tim and Sid a couple weeks ago and said he was the biggest problem. I hope the fellas take him to task for that ridiculous opinion. They must have run out of time at that point, though. Stafford was 20 of 28 for 212 yards, 5 touchdowns. But guess what he was when he was being blitzed? The Eagles blitzed Matt Stafford 25 times. He was sacked once, Johnny Dangerously, and completed 15 to 23 passes for 187 yards and 3 touchdowns while being blitzed. Worst player, Dez Bryant. Wasn't very effective for the Dallas Cowboys. And after two, we'll explain why Dez's trash talk motivated those Carolina Panthers. Warren Moon, Hall of Fame quarterback. Travis Lule, former BC Lions quarterback. All in the 2 o'clock hour. Lots of football for you on a Friday. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360.